Welcome all of you. Friday, I'm not getting any response even after a party. It's 8:30 in the morning. I think they gave you 15 minutes of leeway because of late night. How many of you took the large ride, the what is called the Superman? Wow, very few, especially after food. I think they would have done that before dinner. Okay, welcome again. This is a session to talk about architecting Azure for an enterprise. Basically, the session is coded for level 300. The main reason is that whatever I'm going to talk about, I'm not going to cover the basics. The expectation is for you to know the basics and then appreciate the limitations or considerations that goes in building the architecture or what is called the base platform for Azure. Okay, so if you are not following any of the basics when I go through, please feel free to interrupt me. And if your expectations are something different, sorry, this is not the right place for you to be in the morning. Session objectives and takeaways. Mainly, I want you to understand what are all the considerations that goes in when you start planning an Azure platform for an enterprise-wide adoption. That means that all the departments, all the activities, all the applications, everything is going to go into Azure. What kind of network I should think of? What kind of subnets? What kind of what is called the storage architecture I should think of? What kind of placement of security that you need to think of? So all these considerations that you are going to put together and then come out with a, what is called the architecture for an enterprise to go start deploying, okay? Understand the architectural models. There are certain resources that are available as a best practice and architectural models that are on the internet. Maybe I'll walk you through shortly. So you need to, what is called, follow that and put solution, what is called the architecture together. So that's the purpose of two things that I want you to walk away with, those two. And why do we run this session? Because the nature of engagements are getting complicated. The customers are trying to adapt cloud. The what is called the take-up in the market is huge. Now we realize from a lot of customers that, hey, it's like a shadow IT. People start using it. We want to, what is called, the IT departments are getting in and asking for what is called the proper platform with the proper governance and guidelines so that they can go ahead and then manage the complete environment in a very efficient and proper professional manner. So that's the reason that we come out with this, what is called the session. And what are all the customer needs? Customers are seeking enterprise-grade setup. For example, if every application owner goes and stands up a subscription, storage account, VNet, start consuming it, very first limitation that they hit is their express route. They can't share, or what is called, they can't use the express route circuit more than 10 VNets, for example. So one by one by one, the limitations pop up, and managing for central IT becomes a headache. So that is the reason that customers are looking for a solid architecture. Okay, and once again, the third line is very important. Bad choices are hard to undo. If you don't put this architecture in the first place, if there is a sprawl, bringing them back together requires a lot of effort and money. So that's the main reason that you need to start thinking of designing in the first place, even if it takes a month in order to come out with a proper architecture that suits the business. I think it's worth looking at it if the company is totally betting on the cloud. Okay. What are we going to look at? We are going to look at quota and limits. Each and every subscription, each and every what is called the service inside, even though we say that the elastic and the infinite capacity, you still hit with some limitations. And they are well documented. You need to understand what they are. How am I going to overcome those limitations by designing a solid architecture? So that's the purpose of the complete enterprise architecture is about. And there is something called accounts, departments, and subscriptions. When you sign up an enterprise agreement with Microsoft, you get an enterprise account. Enterprise admin account, and then you further subdivide that into what is called the departments and subscriptions. and departments and what is called the enterprise account. It's a different portal, not the Azure management portal. Azure management portal, you manage the services inside the subscription. I'm not sure how many of you have gone through. There was a session, I think if I'm not wrong, on Tuesday, that spoke very much in detail about that. So if you have missed it, please go and watch the recording. My colleague Gavin spoke about what is an enterprise admin account, what you can do, how you can set up departments, how you can set up subscriptions, how do you track the billing, how do you analyze and charge back, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that is a big topic. We will look at it very high level, how that impacts your enterprise architecture, and then we'll move on after that. So if you want detailed information, jump into that session. Regions and service availability. Even though a lot of services goes general what is called the general availability mode, they are all not deployed in every region and data center. They are rolled out in a phased manner, or certain services stay at a global level. For example, Azure Active Directory, they are not tied to a specific data center. They are all global service. No matter where you deploy your resources, you will be leveraging Azure Active Directory. So you just need to be aware that your data is going to be on a global location. So there is a site that explains about what are all the Azure services available, how many data centers we have, which region, what services are available. So you need to know about that. Mainly that also affects your what is called the express route topology, or the connectivity, native connectivity. So you should be aware of that. Next is the naming convention. There are certain services that are unique globally, that are within the data center, that are within the subscription. So you need to be aware of that, so I'll go through that in detail. Then we'll look at the storage considerations, what do you need to think about storage when you start, and networking, what you need to think about, and the identity considerations. So I'll go through one by one in detail. As I said, I expect that the basic stuff that you're familiar with, how many of you are, can you give me a quick show of hands? You're familiar with Azure, like you are deployed, played with it. That's good, quite a good number. I do see some people, hands didn't go up. So if anything that is blocking you from understanding along the way, please stop me and ask me. Quotas and limits. If you look at it, the screen is too small for you guys to see. Maybe I will, what is called, switch to, there is a URL at the bottom. We'll be sharing the decks later, so you can take a look at it, but I will quickly show you on the screen so you get a picture of where it is. Okay, so just a simple Bing search. Azure subscription and service limits will bring up this page. So if you go a little bit deeper, you will see what are all the services available and what are all the limitations. For example, if I go ahead and look at my networking, you can see that Express Route Circuits, or what is called per subscription, is 10 of them. Express Route Circuits per region for ARM mode. There are two modes in Azure, ASM or ARM mode. ARM mode, what is the limitation? And what is, for example, if you look at the maximum number of routes, 10,000, for example. So these, I'm not going to go into details of what are they, but you just need to understand that there are certain limitations there. For example, if you have an internal network, which is more than 10,000 VNets that you need to publish, Azure Express Route side, we can't receive it. Once again, there are ways to overcome this. A lot of limitations, if you notice that they are soft limitations. You can simply make a request to our support team. They will be increasing, able to increase it. And that depends on how far they can go, depends on the services and what are the hard limits on the backend hardware. Okay, so all you need to know is there are limitations on each and every service that we look at, including, for example, if you are designing an NSG, network security group, you can have number of rules inside the security group. For example, maximum 100 rules, maximum 10 network security groups per subscription. things like that. So you need to think of this. Otherwise, you will be thinking and designing a single subscription, multiple VNets and multiple subnets inside, and you expect like hundreds of security groups to be placed. Along the way, while you deploy, you might hit with a limitation. Okay, so that is the quotas and limits that you need to be aware of. Again, the documentation is very detailed. It talks about various, what is called the components of the service, what are all the limitations. Okay, let me go through quickly. Subscription, next is subscription services and roles. Before I jump in, any questions on the limits? Have you guys hit with anything, any good, bad experience? Very quiet. Okay, subscription services and roles. If you look at this document, as I said that earlier, you have the enterprise account admin on the top, then you have the department, you have the account below subscription. So whenever you manage or do something in the enterprise, or what is called the Azure management portal, you are at the bottommost box. Okay, so billing, you can get a breakdown from those levels. So if you, what is called, if your business has multiple divisions on a higher level, different, what is called the P&L balance sheet, and you want to distribute them, charge back, you can think of using this model for that, or it is totally what is called isolated from the security point of view. So you can even look at that. So how do I design this? What are all the business requirements? Availability, recoverability, performance, there are many. I'm not going to go through in detail, so you can read them through. They are very self-explanatory. Each and every point that is on this slide will impact how you are going to design your subscription model, basically. So if you want to have a very high level of security isolation, subscriptions might give you that. So you create two different subscriptions. Starting from a top-level administrator, you have a control of who is going to manage, what is called manage and monitor that. Administer that, whereas other subscriptions you will not be able to get in. But at the same time, if you want to have too many isolations within the organization, you are going to end up with too many subscriptions. That is going to give you a different kind of problem, like you can't connect to your express route, your management becomes a headache, too many subscriptions, there is a chances of what is called getting loopholes on the security, et cetera, monitoring, et cetera. So you need to carefully think about and balance the security requirements and your operational expectations. So subscriptions are basically what is called the kind of security boundary. And within bracket, you have a, it is changed with ARM, what is called the RBAC, role-based access control. So what is it basically? Earlier, before ARM was released, if you want to control the security, you got to kind of what is called give permissions on the subscription level. You add a person as a co-admin. Once you add them as a co-admin, they have every right inside the subscription. So, which was a challenge. With the introduction of role-based access control, now I don't need to add them as a co-admin. I create a resource group for a specific project. Inside that, I add a person or a group and control them. These guys can only create a virtual machine. These guys can only restart and stop the virtual machine. Things like that, very granular permissions. So that has changed, but still subscription can be seen as a total isolation as well. So that is something you need to do a bit of research, what it is, and understand before you jump into that. And subscription is a billing unit as well. Anything that you do when you, what is called the detailed billing is thrown out, you see billing by subscription as well. So that is another quick way of consolidating from the billing perspective. Logical limit of scale with the resources can be allocated. A lot of limits are tied to the subscription. So for example, number of cores that you can deploy, number of VNets that you can create, they are all tied to the subscription. So once again, go back to the page that I was telling you, quotas and limits. Look at that, what are all the limitations for a subscription, and think before you put down your topology. Consideration, subscription is its own and doesn't cost anything. When you create a new subscription, it is just a placeholder and it doesn't cost anything. So that should not affect your design criteria. Subscription has its own administrators. Subscription is accountable for its own consumption and standards. So these are like, you need to understand what's the characteristics of subscriptions. Can I go for multiple subscriptions because I want to have a highest possible isolation? Every project or every virtual machine that I create or every web app I create, can I go for a separate subscription? Yeah, you can technically do that, but it comes with certain baggages. For example, patching, monitoring, training, managing the security, everything is going to be a headache. And different models, two or three models we put down just to give you a feel of what are the pros and cons of each and every model. So if you are deciding to choose to go for my procurement, my sales, my production, finance, different subscriptions, subscription by department. Yes, that is one model. The pros is low express road circuit cost because hardly maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 departments maximum. So that should fit in. And a simplified subscription management, not too many subscriptions. So easy for you to control and manage. And no VNet subscription limits that you will hit with because the moment you create a subscription by department, maximum of 3, 4, 5, 6 virtual networks. I'm not talking about the subnets, it's on the virtual network level. So it is not going to be too many, easy to manage, and easy to maintain. But the cons, granular role-based access control is needed. That means that, for example, finance. Finance might have 10 different subdivisions, and they are running 5 applications each. Each application requires various services and different stakeholders for those. You want to control the security within that department for these 50 different pieces or 50 different groups. So that might become a challenge, and subscription limit issues could issue. For example, as I said earlier, the number of network security groups, number of storage accounts, number of virtual machines that you can deploy. Because finance could be like 10,000 users in a large organization. And then creating one single subscription for that, you might hit with that limitation if it is a large organization. So these are few plus and minus. And once again, you can't prescribe this is the right model for a specific customer. Depending on the customer's business needs, size, expectations, everything vary from customer to customer. So all you need to know is that what are all the pros and cons, discuss with the customer, explain them what it is, then come out with a model to do that. Okay, next is subscription per environment. That means, for example, developers separately, lab separately, Q&A separately, production separately. What are all the pros and cons? Again, the pros are almost the same, ExpressRoute, VNet, what is called the address space can be managed easily because maximum of 4 environments or 5 environments will be there in an organization. So it is all within the limits. Once again, the issue could be the permissions, multiple departments, and then managing it together all in the same basket could be a challenge. Next is the subscription per application. Yeah, you can think of that. In a typical organization with, for example, employee size of 10,000, you will find at least 100, 150 applications. And just imagine that 150 or 100 subscriptions, how tough it is to manage and deploy your, what is called the security policies and security groups and et cetera. So it is increased network cost. You might even hit with a limitation like every subscription, you create a virtual network, 100 virtual networks, one express route can't support. You create multiple express routes, and every express route circuit that you create, you're going to pay that much. So the cost balloons. Okay, so think about that when you are choosing the per application. But at the same time, you may be managing the large LOB, which is SAP for an organization, and all you worry about that. This is a perfect model there because it's just one single subscription and one virtual network. All my gigantic servers are sitting there. Everything is managed from a single place. So there is no right or wrong. You need to understand what are the impact and choose the right option. This is a, once again, there is a URL below, which you can grab it later. So this site explains what are all the services are available in which region. So whenever a new service is launched, you will not see that across all the regions. So you need to be careful of this if you are tightly limited with the governance. your data can't go out of the country, for example. What you can do, you have a privacy information. You need to think about this before you jump in. Okay, so keep an eye at your favorites, bookmarks. Keep an eye whenever you start designing anything. And once again, as I said, if you want a service that is not in Australia, your express route is connected to Australia, and you are moving to US, your data governance, privacy policies, everything allows you to do that, you are moving there, your express route may not support that. You may need to either go through your public internet using a VPN, or you need to move on to something called Express Route Premium add-on, which costs you money, so that the traffic can be routed from using the same express route that you are connected with Australia, using the same express route to US. So different things differently work. So all you need to understand is that, and what is called, be clear what services are available where. And at the same time, if you are thinking of what is called the data centers like India, China, the one we announced in Germany, including Australia, not every customer can deploy in these data centers. You need to have a billing mechanism in that particular country in order to deploy there. So for example, if you go ahead and then make an agreement using in USA, you try to deploy in Australian data center, you'll be blocked because of the taxation and other legal requirements. So be aware of what are all the limitations, where you can deploy, where you can't deploy, what services are available, where, so that is going to be critical. And also understand that if you are a partner, if you are designing a network, or what is called the architecture for your customer, or even if you are a customer yourself, end customer yourself, understand how the current division is there in the IT department. Who holds the power and authority? You may want to define your architecture according to that. For example, your IT is totally what is called silos, like storage is handled by somebody, networking is handled by somebody, computing is handled by somebody. Then you may want to design your subscriptions keeping them in mind. All the storage accounts fit into multiple or two or three subscriptions. All the network fits into other subscription. Why? Because they need to have the full administrative permissions. You can try to influence them, change them in a best suited model for the business, but a lot of places that is not easy, so you need to be mindful of how the IT is divided and then how they are all managed. But what is called technically designing Azure architecture, you can suit to them if you want to. Okay, next is the naming considerations. Naming considerations that you need to think of. As I mentioned earlier, there are certain services that are available in, that are uniquely named. For example, if you're creating a storage account, you can't have same name across two different storage accounts. They are globally unique. Similarly, if you're participating on a public endpoint when you create a virtual machine, your names are going to be globally unique as well. So think about it, and then come out with a naming convention. Don't just deploy like that, because if you just give the create a resource group, assign a permission, give it to the application owner, go and deploy, they might screw up with the naming, and you might end up with the issues on managing it. So define a proper naming convention. So the good example is like your segment, your location, your department, dash, 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 dash. And once again, this is just a guidance, so you can go ahead and then choose what matters you. And the URL below mentions what is called, there's a website that talks about best practices for naming convention itself. So they have explained what are all the limitations with the naming convention and what is the best practice for an enterprise customer. So it's a quite detailed document. And in detail, if you want, our services department has put down something called a reference architecture, like 500-600 pages of document. You get that as part of engaging our services. So just for high-level architectural design, if you want, Microsoft Services will be able to help you as well. Okay. Whenever we go to the customers with the quota, we hit with the limitation like, hey, I'm not able to create that, I'm not able to do that, I'm not able to do this. When we drill down deeper, we have noticed that they have reached the limits. So we came out with a very quick script to what is called the look at the limits. Maybe if anybody is interested, just ping me offline. I will see how we can make that available to you. Give me a second, my machine is still coming up. So it's a simple PowerShell script that interrogates the Azure subscription and gives you, what are all the limits that they have reached. So, for example, if I run this command, so what I'm doing here is basically, what is called command I issued that give me the quota limits. We have written the script to go and fetch how much resources are created, like how many affinity groups, cloud services, networks, etc. What is the limit? What is the percentage that it has been used? So you can, one thing you should be aware of is that Azure changes every day, every week. So for example, even if you write a script and keep it a month back, that is not going to be good in the next release. So if you notice that if you have installed Azure PowerShell, the version keeps moving like every week. Whenever the new SDK is launched, whenever the new PowerShell commandlets are pushed out, they even change the complete syntax. For example, this is what I was explaining. So because of the changes, it was working 2 days back, and then now it fails, but I get summary information still, but the detailed ones are going off. So the commandlets, everything keeps changing. So if you are writing any scripts, just beware that for a while, you need to have a very high maintenance of keeping them up to date. Okay, so that is the capability to interrogate. So REST API, PowerShell, as well as on the portal as well, we have a certain basic information exposed in the portal as well. Okay, so if I go to my subscriptions, these are all my subscriptions. And if I want to know, instead of writing a PowerShell script, I want to know how much I have used up. So very high level, what you can do is you can go to usage. You can also see how many cores are allocated for your subscription, how much you have used up. Basic information, not as detailed as that, but the team is working on improving this GUI as well. So time being, you might need to depend on the scripts. Again, on the GitHub, a lot of PowerShell scripts are popping up. So maybe just search there and then get them. That is another way of getting support from the community. OK, storage considerations. Before I jump on, any questions so far? Very quiet, so I don't know whether you fully understand, appreciate, or I lost you guys. Okay, let me go through storage. Storage considerations, you need to think of initial footprint. Where you need to start is, first thing is understanding the limits. For example, every storage account you can have maximum of, what's the size?
32 terabytes.
No, it's much larger. Storage account itself, 500 terabytes. Per storage account, 16 terabytes per virtual machine or 32 terabytes per virtual machine, depending on the size that you choose. But a storage account itself, you can go much larger. And second thing is number of IOPS. Every storage account can scale up to 20,000 IOPS. I'm talking about a normal storage, not the premium SSD storage. Right? So even though it gives you that like 500 terabytes, but you are limited with 20,000 IOPS. Every virtual disk that you attach in a virtual machine gives you 500 IOPS. If you put like 16 virtual disks for a machine, 8,000 IOPS, that means literally like 40, 50 terabytes when you reach your IOPS. So you need to think of that. And what is called, think of how it is done on-prem, and think of how many storage accounts you need. Also, you need to think of how do you protect it. Also, you think of, is it going to be locally available only, or do I need a geo redundancy for my storage? Again, I'm not talking about virtual machine. I'm talking about just the storage layer. When you talk about local redundant, that means that we keep three copies in the same data center. If the whole data center goes off some reason, you'll be in trouble. So go for a geo. You get three copies on one data center, another three copies on the other data center. But at the same time, you need to be aware that data center to data center, synchronization is not a sync copy. They are a sync copy. So you might have a little bit of data loss if something happens. First thing. Second thing, even when you say GRS, you don't have any control on when the secondary data center comes up. You only Microsoft decides when the whole data center goes off. We enable the GRS automatically to become a primary. So you don't have any control for any reason, like backup, what is called the reading it for any other reasons. If you want to have access to the redundant copy, global redundant copy, you just need to choose another offering called read access GRS. So that is another offering that you can think of. Then premium storage, if you are running workloads like a database, you want a very high throughput, you can think of using the premium storage as well. There are multiple tiers depending on the size and IOPS. You can choose that. So those things that you need to remember. And exposed in one or more storage accounts with each Azure subscription. That means what they are trying to highlight is that there are certain protections on the service level. There are certain protections on the storage, what is called the subscription level. So service level, for example, Microsoft takes care of it. If you are worried about how the data is stored, if one of the operational staff goes in, plugs my hard disk and goes away, am I going to lose my data? So they are all striped across multiple disks, across multiple chassis. If somebody need to, what is called, assemble, take a file and assemble it, they need to at least take 10 different hard disks from different locations. Just a feel of it. So you don't need to worry about the physical security there, data landing in somebody else, because that is well taken care and then audited, and then certifications are around that. So you should be feeling more comfortable because they are much more secure than your own on-prem stuff. And the subscription level, when you create a storage account, you get a primary and secondary storage keys. And they are on a public endpoint. If that storage key is compromised, you are going to be in trouble. Because they don't need to be on your network. They can be on a public endpoint. They may be able to get it. So how do you overcome that? For your applications when you design, think of coming out with a temporary access key, time-bound access key, and very well permission defined, like read-only, read and write, what you want to do. So either think of that or what is called, think of cycling the key on a very periodic manner. If you go into the internet and search for it, there is a good blog that talks about how do you cycle the key on a daily basis. And then once you cycle the key, how do you move the key, populate to all your applications that are requiring those keys. So there is a very detailed information on that that can be used, as well as there are various level of encryptions at rest and what is called on the wire and stuff like that. So if I go in detail, depending on either infrastructure as service or platform as service, they do vary. So for example, infrastructure as service is exposed one or more storage accounts for each subscription. So your storage accounts are created inside the subscription. You can create multiples. One storage account can go into another virtual machine that is running on another place. So they can be consumed across the subscription. And the second point is data don't reside on a single disk. Whatever you put in, even if it is like 100 MB, you don't expect them to be on a single disk. They are all striped and multiple disks and taken care of from the security angle. And data addressed, there are various technologies, like you have a key vault that generates a key, and then using that key, you can encrypt the data. And I'm not sure how many of you heard that a couple of days back, they announced the BitLocker with for a data at rest encryption. So you can use that, including the boot volumes with the third-party solutions and stuff like that. So at rest, you have a lot of encryption features. And in transit, you have typical network security like IPsec, HTTPS, TLS, etc. And also what is called when you dump the data, large volume of data into your disk, ship it to us, so that you can copy to Azure storage instead of copying through the WAN link. When you do that, that disk is also encrypted with BitLocker by yourself. So once it reaches our data center, the guys simply connect it. It's your responsibility to decrypt and copy it to your storage account. So in transit, it is fully encrypted as well, even if you're sending through physical medium. And access to it, as I said, that a shared access signature gives you time-bound specific access that you need. For example, you store pictures in your storage account and then you wanted to stream it through to your mobile or to your web apps. Always don't use your storage account with infinite privileges. Go through the shared access signature so that even if it is compromised, it is compromised for a specific period of time, and then you get full control after that. You have to protect your storage account key. That is the most critical one. If you are moving from on-prem world, there is nothing equivalent to this. So if your IT processes and operational processes, you need to take care of this particular part. Unfortunately, it's the nature of the cloud, either with us or any other competitor. This is a public endpoint that comes with the key, which is the topmost to hold for the contents. So in my opinion, one big thing to worry about from security angle, that's something that you need to think of. But you have a lot of ways of what is called protecting it, but you need to have a proper procedures and process in place. Okay, when it comes to the PaaS, when we talk about PaaS, for example, Azure Web App, SQL Database, SQL Data Warehouse, HD Insight, so a lot of PaaS services. Once again, they also use one or more storage accounts. The bottom part, service part, is the same because we'll ride on the same architecture or same services. At rest, in transit, access, once again, you have some of them available depending on various services. For example, if you are thinking of Azure SQL Database, just by a single click, you can encrypt the whole database that goes onto the disk, that goes onto the backup, everything. So without that key, you can't do anything. So encryption is taken care of there as well. So all you need to do is just when you put on your architecture or what is called the process, if anybody is using a SQL PaaS database, there should be an organizational policy if security is critical that it must be with the TDE. So that when your auditors and everybody goes through, the complete team, there may be 100 different people creating the database, everybody is going to follow the same procedure and policies. And there are a lot of third-party tools that are coming up that goes ahead and then audits and tells you the information like, hey, your corporate policy is supposed to be all the database to be encrypted. 10 of them are not encrypted. And how many of you heard about Azure Security Center? Yep, so that is a new service that Microsoft is launching. I think it is going to be available soon. It's in a private preview now. That is going to recommend all this kind of vulnerabilities and what you need to do, what are missing, etc. So there are tools that are coming up, still maturing. A lot of third-party vendors are what is called jumping and building it, but you need to think of that when you design. And a lot of considerations, once again, many points. We just want you to have this as a reference point when you start designing. So go ahead and then get the deck from the portal once it is available, and then go through them as like a cheat sheet when you start building your architecture. Now, switch gears from storage to networking. How much time do I left? So networking considerations, what you need to think about, just think about how your network is designed on-prem, how many segments are there, how the each and every segment is protected, like front-end, middle, back-end, database, how they are protected, DMZ, what kind of rules, et cetera. You just have a very good understanding of that. You will be able to replicate the same on the cloud, or you maybe come out with the better design, or in certain places, you might need to go back one level down because of the availability of the services and capability. So think of that, and then if you want a typical architecture to be available, yes, it is available. So what you need to worry about when it comes to the planning, connectivity, how are you going to connect? Are you going to use an express route, site to site, point to site? If it is site to site, how many network subnets I have on my on-prem, how many I'm going to have on the cloud, how I'm going to wire them up? Am I going to create multiple VPN tunnels, or I'm going to do a daisy chain? How I'm going to do? So just think about the connectivity, topology, and how I'm going to secure. If it is a VPN, yeah, you have a what is called the encryption built in. If it is an express route, your traffic is going to flow through depending on what kind of security devices you place in between. For example, before the traffic leaves your premise, you may want to encrypt. Yeah, it is a dedicated wire. It is nobody is going mad in the middle. Attack is very less. But still, if you want to protect it, you may want to put a firewall here, a firewall there, encrypt the traffic before it leaves the express route. So depending on, because I have seen customers, even for what is called the express route, they go ahead and then introduce the firewalls or VPN in between. So think about security as well. And what is called administrative headaches, like what point-to-point or site-to-site, what are all the limitations, what are all the protocols supported, what are all the compatible devices that you need to have on-prem, because not everything is supported. So think of all those things, and then design your architecture according to that. And from the end user side, you may give them the, what is called the, using HTTPS or HTTP TLS, so ensure that your endpoints that are either internally in the organization or public facing are properly secured as well. And once again, I'm not sure how many of you heard about, there is a lot of network virtual appliances are there, like Barracuda, Fortinet, Checkpoint. They all have their, what is called the software-based firewall that are built and readily available in the marketplace that you can deploy in front of your network so that it functions like your on-prem firewall. Same kind of policies, same kind of management tools, everything. So that is another thing that if you want to, you can introduce. Express route, if you are connecting them through a dedicated network, dedicated line, think of what are all the options available for you. We have a couple of them. One is called exchange provider model, network service provider model. That means that you get your telco to lay a cable from your organization straight to Azure data center or go through a third party to terminate it. So understand what is available, what are the cost. Do a very quick homework, go to the sites, look at the pricing options and decide which model suits you. And just keep in mind, there are a few of them, like we call it as a public pairing, private pairing, Office or Microsoft pairing. Okay, that means your Office 365 traffic can go through certain pairing. All your virtual machines that you deploy on your own virtual network goes through the private pairing. For example, I'm exposing Azure machine learning, what is called the storage, what is called the database. They are exposed through a public endpoint. You might want to go through express route even though it is a public endpoint. So multiple pairing can be configured. So work with the partners or whoever is expert in the express route and design your topology accordingly. Just ensure that you get optimal performance. So it's not very simple just hooking it up. So just think about getting a professional advice before you jump in. Network topology, as I said earlier, you can think of multiple sites on-prem, multiple sites on cloud. How am I going to establish connectivity? For example, you have internal, external. Internal has three different subnets, and like a DMZ, database layer, etc. You have firewalls in between protected that. And then I want to replicate on the cloud. How am I going to connect each and every layer? Am I going to establish VPN tunnel from every segment to every segment? Or how am I going to do? Just think about it. There are multiple ways of doing it. Once again, there is a detailed document on including the PowerShell scripts and details. How do you configure each and every one of them? Okay, that's why. So if you want to jump into every one of them, you need to know the what is called intricate details of those. So you may need to, you may want to equip yourself if you find this is the area that you need focus. Implementation network security typically falls into two areas: managed traffic flow between users and application, between the tiers. For example, your front end to back end, or user to application to the end user PC. So you need to think of both, and then what is called proper security need to be put in place. Network automation, let me cover that shortly together. So there are a bunch of scripts that can tell you how many IP addresses are available, and then how many security rules are there, extract and give you so that you can pump it to reporting tools and pick up any what is called the anomalies inside. Identity consideration, this is the Active Directory, Azure Active Directory. If you are having on-prem Active Directory, you can use the AD Sync, which is the bridge. Synchronize your stuff into Azure Active Directory. And then once that is done there, your users can be authenticated using Azure Active Directory. And what is called, there is a new service has been introduced in a public preview. If you have a domain controller on-prem, you use the bridge to synchronize, you can stand up as a service another ADDS or Azure Active Directory domain kind of domain controller, kind of domain services we call it as. So it's something like having your domain controller running on Azure as a managed service, and the synchronization is taken care of by the bridge. So if you have a machine to join the domain, that happens on the cloud automatically. So that is there. So basically, your on-prem identity, we are able to replicate to the cloud and give you full features with that. So once again, enabler and consumer. Enabler, like IT guys, IT pros, for example, you go ahead and then deploy your various resources. Using Azure Active Directory, now I can grant permission. Who can create a virtual machine? Who can deploy a website? Who can create a storage account? All those things. So just with the AD security, single sign-on, single password, maintained in a single place across on-prem and cloud. And a consumer, like users logging in. For example, you run a web application, which is a payroll, and you want the authentication to take place using Azure Active Directory, the capabilities are there. And once again, I'm touching a tip of the iceberg. This topic is, again, like 4 or 5 hours we can go in detail. So just go ahead and then explore, if you're not familiar, what is Azure Active Directory and what it can do for you. So all you need to think about from this architecture angle, how am I going to take care of my identity? What is available for me? So that when you design a proper architecture, you have an option of going ahead and say that, these are all my Microsoft Live accounts. They are my, what is called the co-admins. They are the people who are going to create the resources and manage. When they leave the organization, nobody is bothered. That is a very big security loophole. If you design with this, when they leave, HR is going to knock them off from your on-prem Active Directory. Everything else is taken care. So you need to think of security from that angle when it comes to identity. Okay, and on cloud, MFA is a just click of a button if you want to, and a lot of other features, as I said, the business to consumers, business to business. For example, you are a large organization. You involve 2 or 3 very large SA companies to support and run your environment. And what do you normally do when you do that? 10 different consultants are coming this month. You create an ID in your Active Directory. The guy leaves from his organization. Nobody knows. ID sits there. Security loophole. Like that, you can think of 10 different vendors from 10 different companies. You are in trouble managing. It's a nightmare managing them. With the business to business, that partner organization synchronizes the AD to the cloud. You synchronize your AD to the cloud. When you want to grant access, you simply pick that organization's Active Directory ID. You say that this person has permissions to come into my resources. Okay, 2 different Active Directories. I'm picking them, granting permission. When he leaves the organization, HR in that organization marks him, this guy is left. Everything else is taken care. So we are not just protecting your own Active Directory users and streamlining it. We are also taking care of business to business. And business to consumers, for example, you are an e-commerce site, you want people to log in with the Gmail or what is called the Google ID or Facebook or LinkedIn, you can even do that with the Azure Active Directory. Yep, next question.
So is there a trust relationship between the directories or just at the user level? Do we trust the whole directory or can we just trust explicit users?
See, both the directories are synchronized to the cloud. Yeah. As long as that directory on the other side grants you permission, you will be able to invite them. So there are a couple of granular level of configurations that that administrator allows these users to be invited. Similarly, this administrator says that I trust that organization, I allow them to invite. But you're not establishing any forest trust or something.
All right.
Not that complicated, it's just allowing them so that they can communicate to each other. I mean, as I said, B2B, B2C, everything is a very deep topic. We can talk for a couple of hours. So just deep dive, get into those. Last one, the Azure AD services, that's what I said. If you want a domain controller on the cloud, you are deploying 100 different virtual machines and you want domain controller there so that the authentication takes place and very effective, that is being made available as a managed service. All you need to do is set up the bridge. You say that I want a domain controller kind of DS domain services there, directory services there, and then we create a domain controller for you, replicate using the bridge, provide you that feature. You don't maintain that, it's a managed service. So one by one, they're all moving into those managed services arena. And just be careful that when you're establishing connectivity to the cloud on an enterprise level, if something gets compromised on the cloud, you are not just exposing the resources on the cloud. Because there is a connectivity back to your organization, you are exposing everything. So you got to think of how you want going to secure them. Okay, think in a bigger scale, just don't think in a smaller resource. Like, I'm going to put a small public-facing website on the cloud, I don't need to worry about. Because you have a connectivity back, you need to think about it. Sorry. Once again, there is a URL. A lot of architectural patterns are exposed, depending on the applications that you are creating, like nice architecture diagrams, PDF, 3D, all your Visio diagrams that you can download, as well as there is a what is called the architecture builder. You say that I want two front-end machines, two back-end machines, two middle tier, and then I want to put a firewall in between them. It's like a tick box, keep on doing it. Finally, it churns out a nice architecture diagram with the details for you. So go to that site. You have much more information there to grab it. Okay, one thing you need to remember is remember that Azure is updated on a weekly basis. Anybody that you talk to, they may not be giving you the right information as well. So always keep an eye, understand what limitations are gone, what limitations are being introduced, because when we introduce a new service, that removes the old limitations and the new limitations pop up. So just be on top of it, understand what it is, and then that will help you to design it. I'm going to walk through your real-world design, then I'm going to very quickly show you that when you define like multiple subscriptions and network, what are all the tools available for you to replicate across multiple subscriptions, and then let's open up for Q&A. This is, we worked with one of the large customer, and then they had like 150,000 employees in Australia, and then they had a very detailed design that they wanted. So basically, they created an enterprise account. Their major business divisions are treated like a department at the bottom, the orange box. And then subscriptions are like dev test, UAT, production, and DR, one by one. And once again, this is debatable. This is depending on that customer's requirement. This is just for your reference, how you can think of. And every subscription is divided into internal and external facing assets. With the internal facing assets, you can have web layer, app layer, and DB layer. They're all subnets. And between the subnets, you introduce the network security group and secure them. Network security group treated as like your firewall. What traffic can flow through, what traffic should not flow through. Okay, and same thing for external. And then what is called, this is a further detail level. For example, if I take from the previous example, the internal or external, if I take it and blow it up, again, you have that app subnet, database subnet, web subnet, DMZ subnet, and then public endpoints are exposed in Azure. Azure has certain controls there. For example, if somebody is coming through your public endpoint, we do the DDoS check before they get in. And we do have what is called the machine learning algorithms and then filtering, and big cybersecurity team is sitting there and then protecting the network, and there is something called blue and red teams trying to hack each other. So all those things are happening there, so you are protected with those layers. And then you need to think of protecting subsequent layers inside your virtual network. And then what is called, if I jump in here, you have the different layers. How am I going to control which projects are going to go, and how do I secure those boundaries? So each and every subscription on a network layer, we have internal multiple subnets. On a security division, each subscription is divided into multiple resource groups. Think of each and every resource group as a project. You are coming out with e-commerce, you are coming out with line of business, you are coming out with SAP, whatever it is. Each and every resource group is a project, and resources are like network, storage, virtual machine, etc. You can define permissions on a subscription level to any Active Directory user or group. You can define permissions on the resource group level. You can define permissions on the resource level. So security is a different topology compared to the network. And if you want, you can get a billing on a subscription level, on a resource group level, on a resource level. And inside the resource group, you can create multiple tags and get a billing depending on a different tags as well. Okay? So this is the what is called the architecture that we came out with. Then we got the partner to go ahead and then deploy this architecture. So if I go back one more slide, each and every subscription has six different subnets, two different VNets. If I go back here, I have 12 subscriptions. That means 12 times 2, 24 VNets times 3 subnets. So I need to repeat what I do in one subscription into multiple subscriptions. And if some new comes up, I need to do all those things. So what is the best way of going about deploying in a very rapid manner? How many of you heard about ARM templates? 1, 2, 3, 4, not bad. So basically, if you go into the what is called the ARM template code repository, Quick Start Templates, there you will see how do you go ahead and then script it to create a virtual networks and subnets and network security groups. Get the code, make some minor changes, suit your environment, test it on one subscription, go ahead and then script it for other subscriptions. Okay, so let me see if time permits, I'll very quickly walk you through. So let me quickly walk you through. It's not going to take long. I just want to give you a feel of how the template looks like. I'm sorry, I'm going beyond the timeline. My apologies. Come on. Well, it's coming up. Any questions so far? Yep.
On the encryption in transit, is that data encrypted between virtual machines which are inside the server?
If you enable IPsec inside the virtual machine, answer is yes. So you need to take care of that part. Sorry, the question was the traffic between virtual machines, when there are two virtual machines running on Azure, are they encrypted? So if you need to take care of it by introducing IPsec or some other mode. Okay, so for example, if you look at it in the Visual Studio, now you can create a new project, and you can call it as a Azure Resource Group project that will create a project with something called JSON outline, and all these three tabs will be there. All you need to do is, for example, imagine there is nothing. You can right-click, add a new resource. You have a lot of resources available here. So if you notice here, I have network interface card, public IP address, network security groups, virtual networks, et cetera, subnets, et cetera. So all I need to do is choose that, click it, it puts the necessary code for you and gives you the parameters and variables. You go and fill in what your network VNet name should be. In their case, it is the business unit, internal, web-based, web subnet. So you define your naming subnets. Once that are all done, the nice template JSON script comes up. You can go ahead and then explore your parameters, your variables. You can change one by one what you want. You click on this, for example. It takes you to the specific line on the code on the right-hand side. You can modify them. Once that is done, all I need to do is simply say deploy, and I want to deploy into a new, for example, let me enter the credentials. So what I'm doing is I have defined my template inside Visual Studio, and I'm keying in my Azure credentials, so it is going to log into Azure, connect to that particular subscription, and I'm going to say that I want to create a new resource group to deploy these resources. I'm going to call this as Ignite. And then where am I going to create this? I'm going to create this in, for example, Southeast Asia. Or let me choose West US. Just do that. I have the storage account and stuff like that created, so it might fail, but I'm just giving you an example, look and feel how it is going to. So you choose the resource group, you choose which data center it is going to be deployed. Once that is done, I say deploy. It starts creating those resources in that particular Azure data center. So once that starts, if I go back to my Azure management portal, so if I go to my resource groups, you see that Ignite demo started. There are no resources. In a couple of minutes, I will see all the resources, what is called popping up. So the finished one will look like this. You can create virtual machines. You can create virtual networks, subnets, security groups, everything that you want. So there is a nice GUI tool inside Visual Studio built in for that. You drag and drop, configure your stuff, create it in one subscription, deploy in multiple subscriptions. Okay? That's how it is, and that's all I got. Any other questions or anything, please let me know. And I know that a lot of stuff here, they will be uploaded to the portal, or my email address is there as well, nraja@microsoft.com. So please do reach out to me if you need any further help. So two things that you learned. What are all the limitations, what you need to think of when you start designing? How do you go about designing them? So those are the two things that I want you to walk out with. And special thanks to services. As I said earlier, if you want Microsoft services to get in, they have a predefined offering in order to design such large environments. So they'll be able to help in a very fast, rapid manner. We call it as a quick start. So please feel free to reach out to your account rep or what is called the drop me an email that I'll be able to link you up as well. And please, please do this, because this gives us what is called the mirror of what are the quality of the sessions, what sessions you like, what you wanted to see moving forward, so that next year you're going to get a better quality sessions. Okay, any questions, please pop by. I'll be here for another 5 minutes. Thanks a lot.